Okay, thank you for tuning in, Austin. This is Another Bottle Down. My name is Mark Rayshap. This is the show where we focus on all aspects of the wine industry. We get to interview sommeliers and importers, and today we have a very special guest, a gentleman who has come from France, come a long way. He arrived at 2 in the morning yesterday, so we will excuse any absences in what he says and cloudiness. Michael Alberghetti is a sales manager for the entirety of the Americas, but he loves Texas. He loves Austin. Michael, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Mark, for having me here.
Yeah, it's wonderful because in the wine world and here in Austin, we hear so much about Bordeaux and Burgundy, but you are really representing a region that is not very well known, right?
Not yet. I'm working on it. Yeah.
Right.
Arriving at 2 a.m., leaving tomorrow for France again. So
wow.
It's a long journey, but it will be all right one of those days.
Yeah. So tell us where. So you represent a producer who is one of the biggest producers in Cahors, right?
Yeah, and one of the biggest in Southwest France.
In all of the Southwest.
A family. It's a family producer. It's just dad and his son are making wines.
Wow. And to orient everybody, so we have south of Bordeaux and west of the Languedoc, we have the southwest of France, right? And in particular, we're talking today all about Cahors.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
Basically, some people referencing the southwest of France, like from the Basque country to the Massif Central.
Okay.
Like it's wide, a lot of diverse production, a lot of indigenous grapes that you never heard of.
Right. And so what are some of those indigenous grapes?
Loin de l'Oeil, Brocol, Duras, Gros Mansang, Petit Mansang, Colombard, Uniblanc. That's kind of grapes that...
That many people haven't heard of.
No, and then you find Malbec. What is that?
I think people know a little bit about Malbec these days, right?
Yeah, Malbec is from Argentina, right? Isn't it?
Well, you know, for maybe some of the Francophiles out there, they think otherwise, right? And that's kind of one of the things that you battle day to day.
Yeah, that's correct. I hear every day Malbec is from Argentina. This is kind of true in a certain way for USA. Like, Argentina is 40,000 hectares of vine,
right.
And Cahors is only 4,000.
Wow.
But Cahors have been making Malbec since 7th century now.
The 7th century?
Yeah, 13th century. We have actually found trace of vine in Cahors 50 years before Christ.
Wow.
It's the history get back that long.
So can we say that Cahors is really the birthplace of Malbec?
Oh, definitely, yes. We know exactly who brought the Malbec to Argentina.
We do, so we know exactly.
Yeah, it's Michel Aimé Pouget.
Okay.
Which was a French agronomist, and he went down there in Argentina. When he saw the terroir, he tried a lot of different grapes, and Malbec was one of the ones that very did well over there. So, he planted, and so far today is working pretty well.
Wow. But we also find Malbec in Bordeaux, right?
Yeah, that's good you mentioned that. So the history is that this get back to the 13th, the Middle Age,
okay.
The history of wine in France. What's happened is like the wine, Cahors was a big region for wine growing, and the wine on the 13th century was exported mostly to England.
Okay.
England was the biggest market. But to get to England from Cahors, at that time that was the river. The river was the easiest way to do. And to do so, you have to stop by the port of Bordeaux.
Uh-huh.
And the Bordelais were making sure they sell their wine before our wines.
Okay.
And they were putting our wines into their wines. They were putting Malbec into their wines.
From Cahors?
From Cahors. Because at that time, their wines were mostly claret, kind of pinky, not very dark. But Bordeaux wines was already red.
Okay.
It's difficult to make a rosé in Cahors.
Right.
We just find out. And since then, the Malbec used to be a big grape for Bordeaux.
Wow. And then they started planting it there as well.
They started planting it as if, why should we have to buy it from Cahors? It doesn't make sense for
right,
us.
Right.
They're pretty good at business, Bordeaux.
Yeah, they do. They
we
do.
Find out. And if you get back to 1855 ranking, you know, the big ranking, that was mostly Malbec, the grapes on those wine.
Really?
Yeah.
And so then what happened? How did Malbec kind of die off in Bordeaux, but it stayed always prevalent in Cahors, right?
The issue is that Cahors Cahors is a tough region. It's very diverse. It's very specific. It's only 50 miles wide, so it's pretty small.
Right.
And there is not too many grapes that grow well. So Merlot doesn't show very well. Hmm. And Malbec doesn't do very well in Bordeaux. That's the issue right now.
Right.
So the climate is quite cold because they have only influences from Atlantic
from
ocean.
The, yeah.
But in Cahors, we are quite in the middle, which is Mediterranean, Atlantic, and Pyrenees. So it's kind of cool climate. We have an Indian summer, which is pretty strong over there.
Right.
And you need that warm in September, October to get smooth tannin and balanced tannin. And
because otherwise the tannin can be really, really aggressive, right?
Yeah,
big wines.
If we think about the Cahors 15, 10 years ago, that was pretty aggressive wine. You were like, yeah. Remember some guys tasting you on some Cahors, and you're like, hey, you have to buy this one now and drink it in 10 to 15 years. You're like, wow, that's not like what we do here in the USA.
Right.
Especially in Texas. Yeah. Oh, man, we don't do that here.
Yeah, I mean, the American market in general, they just, you know, folks want to immediate gratification and to drink the bottle within a few hours of buying it.
Yeah, I think like 70% of the wine here I drink like in 2 hours.
Yeah.
So we did screw cap, right?
Right. And so we'll get into a little bit how innovations in Cahors have kind of changed the style, but I'm really interested in this history. When did your vineyards in the family, in the George Vigouroux family, start to, you know, kind of gain a foothold, and when did they know that there was something special? Because there's quite a history to your property, right?
Yes, you're right. So the property, the Vigouroux wine business, are back to 1887. So since 1887, they were doing négociants, so basically buying wine from all over Southwest France and selling all over France. They were pretty successful at that. And in 1971, Georges Vigouroux thought that maybe time was right to replant vineyard in Cahors.
Okay.
Because Cahors, so we had the big phylloxera, is one of the reason why Malbec was destroyed in France, because it took a long time to find a rootstock for the Malbec.
Okay.
It was resistant to phylloxera.
So meanwhile, in Bordeaux, they found rootstock pretty well, pretty quickly after phylloxera, and they had, by the 70s, pretty well planted back.
Yeah, that was, if you get back before phylloxera, a lot of people are saying that there were more vine in Cahors than in Bordeaux.
Right.
Before phylloxera.
Wow. But
then Bordeaux took this occasion to plant a lot of Cabernet, a lot of Merlot, et cetera, et cetera.
And they found, and for folks listening out there who might not be familiar, phylloxera is the root louse that in the late 1800s, early 1900s, destroyed pretty much the grape vineyards of all of Europe. And then they had to replant the vines on rootstock that was from resistant rootstock, which is really the American varieties. And so the border. So was it because of money that they replanted so quickly, or was it because that it was just easier to do that on Cab or Merlot?
It was both. Yeah. It was money. Bordeaux always had a ton of money because we know that money doesn't really come from wine, actually, from also slavery, etc., and business trade from the port of Bordeaux. But and it was easy. It took a long time to find a good rootstock for Malbec. That was an issue. That was a big issue for Cahors.
But Georges Vigouroux thought, hey, we can't give up. We need to really figure this out, right?
Yeah, because Georges Vigouroux was a passionate guy by wines, passionate by history, etc. And he was looking for a place to replant the vineyard. Because what's happened in Cahors, some people tried to replant the vineyard. In the 50s, there was a big frost that killed all the vines that were replanted. So everybody was kind of, I don't know if growing vine is a good idea.
Right, that was that big frost, very famous, right?
Yeah, the big frost.
What year was it again?
I think it was 51, 52.
In the 50s.
Yeah, 50, I have to double check that.
Yeah, but and we can double check it here on another Bottle Down and post it on the blog as well. Along with a map, we will post a map of the southwest of France on the blog. So that frost really, folks almost didn't want to replant vineyards, right?
Yeah, all the brave guys that did after phylloxera, they were like, I don't know, I might work somewhere in another business.
Right. and families too. I mean, you know, the next generation almost doesn't want to have it really hard, right?
Vineyard planting, when you plant your first vine, you probably going to make one pennies out of it 7 years after.
Right.
Because by the time your vineyard can produce any grapes, And by the time you can produce good grapes, that's another story.
Right.
And then you have to bottle it, age it, and sell it.
Okay, so we're here. It's just an amazing story of Cahors. I love this. So we're in the 70s here. Georges Vigouroux decides to plant Malbec, and he's determined. And what happens from there? I mean, how does he go about it?
So he was looking for a place. He did have some good business going on with a bulk wine. He was selling bulk wine over France, so right. Business was doing good. But he wanted to control the quality. That was the main point. I want to control quality. I cannot just only buy. I want to produce.
Right.
So he was looking for a place, and he found in a museum of Cahors a dinner menu,
okay,
which was back from 1889.
Right, so this is after the classification
but right before, in middle of phylloxera crisis.
Right.
But the wine back on this wine list were back from 74. So wow. Before the classification.
Back. Before the classification.
And you know, at the time before classification, the wine of France were named mostly by the region and only by the name of the chateau.
Okay.
There were only few brands. If you look at the
we know, well, that's still kind of true today. Most wine is named after the region instead of the
drink
grape. Right?
Yeah, you drink a Sancerre, or you drink, but you don't drink
Bandol.
Yeah,
Gevry Jean Bretagne. Yeah,
but you don't always say the name of the chateau when you talk. And at that time, that was very uncommon to say the name of the chateau.
Okay,
the first wine brand is Aubryon. It's well known as Aubryon on the tax export to England. It was like Bordeaux, and boom, first wine came up was Aubryon.
And so people started to know the name Aubryon
over... So he was the first one to really brand his chateau as a winery and as a good wine. And then all the other Bordeaux did it. So the good wine of France started to do that, but not a lot.
Right.
And on this wine menu, you can see a Pommard with no name of the chateau. So just a classical Pommard.
Wow.
Even the Champagne, just Champagne Frappé. No name. You have Chateau Margaux, 74. And you have Chateau de Haute-Serre. Cahors, 74 or so. Wow. So the chateau was already named.
Wow. So it had a reputation at
that
time. Yeah,
it had a huge reputation at that time.
Wow.
So chateau back to the 15th century.
And so Georges Vigouroux sees this menu with all of these iconic Bordeaux, Margaux, Pommard, and then the name Haute-Serre.
And he knew Haute-Serre because Haute-Serre, it was still there. It's a 15th century chateau. But he knew Haute-Serre as a different vision of Haute-Serre. Haute-Serre was like kind of only four-wall chateau. All the chateau was abandoned. There was like nothing left. It was like forest all around the chateau. We knew there were vines before. You can see like indigenous vines, but there were like nothing left. It was like a bush. It was a bush.
And that's just because. So it was foul. It was empty. It was abandoned. Right.
Yeah, it was abandoned. Totally abandoned. So he got it for cheap.
Wow.
He got it for cheap, and he decided to replant. But the terroir was looking good. It's nice, slopey, facing southwest, very rocky. You have red clay on the top, so it was looking good for somebody that visit vineyards. It was looking great vineyard.
Very cool.
He has the history.
Wow, and so he bought the place for cheap, and then he replanted. Because the vineyard was probably in not great shape, or do some of the old original vines...
Oh, there were no vineyard left.
No vineyard left.
There was no vineyard. There was a forest.
Wow. So Haute-Serre was the first that he bought, because then he expanded and started buying others, right?
Yeah, but Haute-Serre was a long process. Haute-Serre took 3-4 years to replant it.
Okay.
Because the issue is that if you get back to that time, the vine at that time were not mechanical.
Right.
It worked at all.
Right.
And the property is very rocky. You have rock like have 1 meter large.
Wow.
So he has to break all that rock before planting the vineyard to get rose. We need rose on the 20th century.
Right.
And he brought to the vineyard the biggest rocking breaking machine of Europe.
Wow.
And people were driving with bus to the property to see actually the machine breaking the rocks. That was pretty insane.
That's cool.
And and then he replanted 40 hectares straight. And everybody on the Cahors region was coming to him like, what are you doing?
Thinking he's crazy.
Yeah, you're crazy. Well, yeah. You can give me your money if you don't know what to do with it.
Right.
And he was like, no, you will see. This is a good terroir. This is a good terroir.
Wow.
And he was right. I mean, knows the wine are on the best table of the world and ranked top 100 wine specs. So it's good.
Great. We're going to take a short break. We're here with Michael Alborghetti, who is sales manager for all of the Americas for Georges Vigouroux, which is located in the region of southwest France called Cahors. And we'll be back after the break to continue to talk with Michael and dig more into these wines of Cahors. Stay with us. Okay, we are back here. We're joined by Michael Alborghetti, who is a sales manager for the Americas for Georges Vigouroux, which is a property in Cahors. We're very thankful for Michael coming into the studio. He has been traveling in the U.S. For 2 months, and tomorrow he is going back to France, and he's very excited.
Yeah, I'm actually excited to visit home.
Yeah, visit home and visit your girlfriend, right? Yeah. Hopefully she's not listening.
Yeah, no, pretty sure she's not.
Okay, so and if you've missed any piece of this, and Michael's girlfriend can podcast this episode at anotherbottledownradio.com, and we've got a lot of information on the co-op website, koop.org. We're radio for people, not for profit. And we talked before the break about Cahors, how Georges Vigouroux started buying Auxerre, and everybody thought he was crazy breaking up rocks, but he knew that it was a lot of future in store for Cahors and for Malbec. And Michael, where did after Auxerre, and after he had a few years under his belt there, did he expand?
Yeah, he expanded. In the cool story about when he replanted Auxerre in 71, the AOC of Cahors was granted in 73.
Okay. So before the AOC was really granted.
Yeah, so he kind of dragged all the AOC behind him. He's well known as a pioneer there.
Wow.
Yep.
And when the AOC, and that's Appellation d'Origine Contrôlée, right? Did I say that okay?
Yeah, AOC. It's no AOP. Changing all the time. 73.
73. What were the rules that were established for Cahors at that time? Are they the same?
That was mostly, at that time, that was mostly the definition of the areas.
Okay. The boundaries.
The boundaries, yeah. The boundaries. And Auxerre was quite lucky because if you look at the map of Cahors, it's very wide. It's like 50 miles, only wide. It's wider than higher. And Auxerre is right on the bottom east, okay, which was not supposed to be on the AOC.
Okay.
Before, because it's very rocky, nobody grows vineyard there. Only few pioneering, because it's very tough. But it's probably the best terroir that we find out.
Wow. And of course, vines really like poor soils. So if it's
a poor soil.
Yeah. And vines really like that. They like to struggle, and then they put all of their energy into reproduction, which is the fruit, and that's the concept there. So great. So he was before the establishment of the AOC. What else did... So they established the boundaries and then also requirements of grapes, right?
The grape... at that time, it was mostly the yield.
The yield.
Control the yield, not produce too much, take care of the aging, also on the wine, the density also, the minimum density that you needed.
Minimum density of planting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we'll talk about that later, but density is a big part of the game of Cahors.
Okay, and when did the minimum requirement for Malbec get established? Because when we see the word Cahors on a label, we know that it is by definition a certain percentage Malbec, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So it changed with the time because we used to have Jurançon Noir twin Cahors, which was giving up, I think it was 98 something.
So Jurançon Noir
was also in Cahors wine, as Tanat, Malbec, and Merlot.
Okay. And so Jurançon Noir is really from that region, right? Jurançon?
It's from Jurançon.
Right.
But it is not a good grape for Cahors.
And Tanat is really from the region of Madiran, right?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. And so those were planted in Cahors at the time, and then they thought, okay, with quality, we need to eliminate those essentially, right?
Yeah, that's bad. I mean... The biggest change that was going to be a game changer for Cahors was 2002,
okay,
when the AOC allowed us to put the grapes on the front label.
Right, that was big.
That was big. That was probably why I'm here today.
Right. Well, we're thankful for that. So tell that story. So previous to 2002, in France, you could not have the name of the grape on the label.
Yeah, right? That was the case.
Why?
Because
I think that that's hard for American consumers to even grasp the thought that that's possible, you know?
Because it's all about terroir in France.
Okay, so it's all about the region.
We have 350 regions.
Right.
If you start to name that by the grapes, you don't. But that was good before.
Right.
Because the region was meaning something. That was very... Because the winemaking techniques were not that high. So really the terroir was talking by itself. Like the human was just like trying to do whatever he could. Right. No, the winemaking techniques are so good that you can find amazing wine and very bad wine on the same region.
Right.
So the region is not really making too much sense. And with internationalization of wine and business wine, that was great to have the grapes to talk to
everybody. Globalization.
Yeah, globalization of wine.
Right.
And the world is a village now, so it was good.
Right. So then finally you could see the word Malbec, and at the same time, Argentina was just kind of coming on the scene really big, right?
Yeah, Argentina was huge.
So that's why, and I believe that that's why Cahors isn't really as well known, because they were late to the game in putting the word Malbec on the label, right?
That's true. I mean, George Hugo was exporting Cahors in New York since then.
Okay.
That was okay. I mean, the business was doing all right, but when we did that, that's where we went from like nothing in USA to a big number.
Right. Very cool.
And when you see Malbec on the front labels from Cahors, that means you have at least 85% Malbec.
Okay.
It's good to know then.
So Cahors, but isn't the minimum 70%?
70%, it's the minimum, correct, on Malbec.
For Cahors.
But if you see Malbec on the front.
Then you know it's 85%.
Correct.
Okay, I did not know that. That's great.
And then you can play with Malbec, Merlot, and Tannat.
Okay.
Very classic is 15% Merlot with Malbec.
Okay, and the Merlot softens up the rough edges, perhaps, of the Malbec.
It used to be the case a lot. It still does a little bit, but no, you can get very, very. I mean, you've tried our 100% Malbec, the Icon,
right?
It doesn't need to be softened. Right?
No, it doesn't. No, but that's because the techniques that go into making that wine, the Icon wine from Mercues, is, you know, they just know what they're doing, and they're doing it perfectly, right? So what's the story on Mercues? So we've got Auxerre. Georges Vigouroux then decides to buy this castle of Mercues.
Yeah, that's correct.
It's so beautiful, too.
Yeah. So the story is actually he bought it because an American importer at that time.
Okay.
Not everybody knows that story.
I don't know that story.
It was the New York importer that came to the region, that was from the region, but that was as a company importing in New York. It's called Baron François.
Okay.
And he came and he talked to Georges, like, you know, Georges, the chateau was for sale since 2 years now. Nobody was buying it. It's like, Georges, you should buy the chateau. That's going to be iconic. That's going to be the image of the region, the symbol.
Right.
And he kind of went into Georges' head, like, yeah, sort of work, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And finally, he did bought it. He did bought it. It was not easy because he has to get all the bank behind him.
Right.
A different time. And the chateau was, it's a huge chateau. It's 4,000 square meters from the 13th century.
Wow. And it does look like the castle of Disneyland.
Yeah, you should put one on your blog.
We will. We will, definitely. We'll put up a picture. It's beautiful.
And it's now a part of the Relais Chateau. That's what I'm here also today. You know, I have a meeting with Relais Chateau tonight.
Right.
It's one of the hotel leading in Southwest France. 4-star, 1 Michelin restaurant.
Wow. But then, so the vineyard, so he saw that this huge potential for enotourism as well, and you can stay at the castle, and it's just fantastic. When did he buy that, and when did he realize that those vineyards could really produce something special as well? It's not just about the tourism and the chateau, right? It's about the vines too.
Yeah, I mean, the chateau was a wine perspective. The chateau was bought to be symbolic.
Right.
So he bought it in 82. He built the winery, which was one of the first architectural winery.
Okay, architectural.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark, for that.
Yeah.
And the vineyard. There is a lot of history in winemaking with that chateau. Back to the wine of Châteauneuf-du-Pape.
Okay.
We have a connection with that chateau. I told you that story last time, I think.
You can remind us and
that the bishop that eventually became a pope was like Jean 22nd,
right?
And his name was Le Duez. He was a bishop of this chateau. So okay. When he was named as pope in Avignon, he went to Avignon. He was like, "Oh, where is my wine? Where is my vine?" There's like no vine at that time there. And it was like, so he brought all his vineyard maker, winemaker, his monks with him.
From Mercues.
From Cahors.
From
Mercues. Wow. He was, yeah. You can still go on his path today. I mean, the stair that he used to go on is still the same.
Wow. I just love this history. So what is happening in today's day and age? I mean, there's the wines are getting a lot of acclaim, and really, Georges Vigouroux is a pioneer in Cahors. What's going on in today's day and age? I mean, the quality is just soaring, right? And there's a lot more investment going into the area.
Yeah, that's correct. A point that I like to mark is that on the 70s, when Georges Vigouroux replanted the vineyard,
mm-hmm.
he was not making wine. Was not his thing.
Right.
He was the first time. Was an experiment. And all the people that was replanting vineyard in Cahors at that time, they were the first time making wines, basically.
Wow.
No, the new generation is coming. No, Bertrand Vigouroux is making the wine.
Okay, so
Georges Vigouroux's
sons. Right.
He's 46. And he really put Cahors far, far on the quality.
Wow.
That's he's really passionate about the wine since he started making wine at 16. So we can say
he's
kind of born in a tank.
Right. and so now, and he makes what percentage of the wine coming out of Cahors? A good percent, right?
Yeah, he makes about 5%, 5 to 10% of the wine.
Okay, and
but we do about 30% of the wine here.
So 30% of the wine in the U.S. is Georges Vigouroux.
Yeah,
it's excellent and testament to your work as well. Can you kind of describe, we've only got a few minutes left, unfortunately, but tell us how Paul Hobbs is coming into the scene now with, I mean, he's one of the kings of Malbec from Argentina, and he's taking an interest as well, right?
Yeah, that's great. So what's happening is like Bertrand, at that time when Bertrand was really taking end of the winery and the winemaking, he went to Argentina to find out, because Argentina was hot, what was their techniques, what was their doing to make amazing wine.
Right.
And he met Paul Hobbs over there. He was like, "Hey, Paul, you should come visit us. You never come to the birthplace of Malbec. You're only not the Pope of Malbec. That's a shame." But he said that. And Paul, "You're right, Bertrand. I'm coming."
Okay.
So he came, he visited, he stayed at the chateau. So he fell in love. And he was like, "Bertrand, we need to do a project together."
Right.
And Bertrand, for a long time, wanted to do a high-end cuvée, which is cuvée icon now. We only make 3,000
bottles. 3,000
bottles. Yeah.
Wow.
And then they were like, "Okay, now they did this wine, which is amazing, 94 points. It was like best ranking Cahors. And now they are doing a brand together, which is a blend between Haute-Serre and Mercues and another chateau that we have, Le Rémy-Pesin.
Okay.
Which is called Cuvée Crocus.
Okay.
Like the saffron flower.
Yeah.
And this can be found in all over U.S. It's going to be popular soon.
Okay.
It's growing.
So it'll be kind of one of the icons and perhaps highly sought after wine.
Yeah, the price won't be iconic. I mean, is there an iconic price on this range? But it's not affordable.
Okay. So we've seen a lot of quality come out of Cahors, but what is the flavor profile compared to Argentina? So, you know, Argentina has really garnered a lot of popularity in consumers. And so can you tell Malbec from Argentina apart from Cahors? What are your opinions on that?
Yes, you can most of the time say the difference. Between the both wine, it's a lot. I would say Cahors is easier. Simple word would be more French style wines. More tannin, more structures, more elegant spices. The nose is nice, earthy. They have a different nose from Argentina and France.
Right.
The nose that you get from Argentina are mostly extracted fruit.
Right.
You have a lot of black fruit, very intense kind of minerality also a little bit, but very fruity base.
Right, in Argentina.
When you smell a Cahors, it's more like you have Herbe de Provence, you have like earthiness, you have like a forest nose, melt with nice fruit too.
Right, sure. You still get that black cherry, and I love that earthiness. I love all wines that are made well, but you know, for me as a wine lover, I do gravitate to the more earthy side, and I think that for folks who do like old world style wines, Cahors is a very nice option. So flavor profile quite different from Argentina. What are we looking at pairing wise, and does that match the cuisine? And what do you like to eat while drinking Cahor?
Oh yeah, that's a good question. I mean, Cahor amazingly food friendly wines.
Right,
it's hard to find a food friendly wines like that because they have spices, they have fruit, they have nice acidity, and they have nice tannin.
Right.
So I like to pair any Cahor. It depends because you have different type of Cahor. You know, Cahor, it's a valley. You have the river going down, and from the river, you have four terraces and one plateau.
Mm-hmm.
And the wines that are made on the third terraces, like Mercuest, third terraces, are very tannic, very intense, very elegant, very deep wine, you know, a lot of structures, a lot of spice. But if you go to the plateau, like Auxerre, it's very elegant, long finish, very acidic wine, mm-hmm. but with nice acidic in a nice way, you know, nice tension, we would say, on our geeky word.
Right.
With beautiful fruit, elegance, not that much tannin, not that much spice, but more balance.
Right.
So if you take, like, say, a wild chicken, you won't have the same wine with a different part of the chicken. It's very different. You tend to have on the wine the bigger, like Mercuest, you tend to have a meat which are more greasy.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go from to the plateau, the wine was more elegant, less tannin, you tend to have less greasy meal,
right,
where you can play. You're talking about minority. You can have tuna fish. It's quite amazing.
Could work with tuna.
Yeah.
Wow. Or we could say, you know, like ribeye versus filet mignon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Where the more elegant, less tannic wine would like the filet mignon.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the ribeye that has really, really juicy, savory notes and a lot of fat would really go with the Mercuest, the more tannic of the,
yeah,
of the two.
Yeah, it's why we sell a lot of Mercuest in Texas.
Yeah. But. And so you've got Mercuest, you've got Auxerre, there's the icon, the icon of Mercuest.
We have basically four wines per chateau.
Okay.
So we start Vassal de Mercuest, then it's Chateau de Mercuest, then it's Cuvée Prestige 66, and then it's Icon.
Okay. And then Auxerre. And where does the pigmentum come in to play?
The Pigmentum, it's a brand. You can find Pigmentum pretty much everywhere here in Texas.
Right.
In a nice wine store, I won't name it. But it's a blend between different terroirs.
Okay.
The idea is to have a consistent brand. The customer get it's affordable Cahor.
Yeah.
In terms of taste, in terms of structures, in terms of pricing, in terms of looking too.
Right.
It's orange and black label.
Right. Well, Michael, thank you so much for being here on Another Bottle Down. Michael Alberghetti is the sales manager for all of the Americas for Georges Vigouroux, a wonderful producer in the Cahors region of France. Michael, hopefully we can catch up soon again. And
yeah, sure. I mean, feel free to come to visit us and with all your listeners.
Yeah, and you can find more information at georges-vigouroux.fr.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And you can... you can put my email too over there if they have a question.
We will post it on the blog. Thank you so much. Thank you to Michael, and keep on tell Benoit that keep on producing great wines, and we'll be appreciative.